Okay, well, thank you. Thank you for the welcome. My name is Stephen Downs. I work in Moncton, New Brunswick, Canada, and I'm pleased to be able to talk to you today. The topic of my talk will be new tools for personal learning, and I'll be looking at new technologies to support new kinds of learning online, moving beyond traditional learning management systems to technologies that support new kinds of learning. You know, one of the things we understand is that it is, in a sense, very easy to teach people things. People are very impressionable. They do remember things. But what's hard is teaching people how to learn the right things, teaching people how to not simply absorb what they see, but to evaluate, to criticize, to assess, and to reflect. Let me tell you a bit about what I do. I produce a newsletter online called OL Daily. This newsletter talks about new technologies and new approaches to learning online. And in OL Daily, I have produced over the years more than 16,000 posts talking about online learning. Now, happily, these are short posts, so it doesn't take all of my time to do them. Still, 16,000 posts gives me a very unique picture of what the world online looks like. And we see topics, conversations, publications, terminology, but most of all, what I see in 16,000 posts is chaos. We have moved, as we have gone online, from an age when information was relatively simple and relatively straightforward to an era where information is complicated and even complex, where it is more difficult to learn and more difficult to adapt to rapidly changing circumstances. So let me present what I may call the first butterfly thesis. And you've probably heard of this thesis before. The idea that a single butterfly flapping its wings somewhere in South America can affect the weather in Central Park in New York City. And of course, it's an application of chaos theory. It's an application of the idea that a very small change in initial conditions can produce a very large change in final result. Our temptation as educators is always to attempt to get at that butterfly, to stop it from flapping its wings, or to start it flapping its wings in order to create change. But of course, this is not a practical solution. When the world is complex, you cannot work with simple causes and simple effects. You cannot describe the world in simple causes and simple effects. This is illustrated mathematically in something called the three-body problem. And the point here is that when you have three bodies that mutually reinforce each other, that mutually affect each other, it becomes impossible to predict what their eventual path will be, what their eventual orbits will be. The theory of learning that I propose, along with various others, that is appropriate to learning in this new environment is called connectivism. And the idea of connectivism is that there is not some curriculum that students are supposed to remember. There's no theory that they need to memorize. There's no body of knowledge that they are to absorb. Rather, any content in the course acts as a thing called the MacGuffin, acts as an object of discussion. But the content is not the product. We are not trying to get people to learn the content. The product of the course is the learner, him or herself. We are attempting to change the state of the learner so that the learner becomes more adept, more able to learn and interact, grow and develop in this field. It's not that there's nothing to learn. It's that what there is to learn is complex. You can't simply describe it in simple steps. You have to navigate through it rather than memorize it. This gives us a theory of learning that might be called the three L's: language, logic, and learning. So that presents the first major theme for learning online, that learning is active engagement, not simple passive observation. It's like actor network theory, but with no presumption of commonality or translation. It's a bit like action research, but we do not presume necessarily that there is a community of practice. What it is most of all is based in the idea of thinking for yourself. It is a focus on critical thinking and reflection. It is a model of free learning. It's a model where learning is not like acquiring a library, not like acquiring the content of books, but rather connecting nodes, much like connecting neurons in a brain, or much like connecting people in a society. In this model of learning, teachers are nodes. Teachers are things that are connected to other things. Students are nodes. Students are connected as well. And teaching and learning are essentially the same process, a process of sending and receiving communications to other nodes. The actual operations that this entails is a set of four major categories: aggregate, remix, repurpose, feed forward. So the technologies are designed to serve these four functions. The idea here, again, is that we are not attempting to accumulate content. Rather, we are attempting to place ourselves within a river of content and to navigate that river, not try to collect that river, to surf that river, to sense that river, to experience that river. Technologically, we use the concept of the personal learning environment. And the idea of the personal learning environment is to give us a central focus, the circle at the center of the diagram there, and then to connect to content, experiences, conversations, and resources that are available online. Our personal learning environment connects us to resources that are out there on the internet. Several prototype personal learning environments have already been developed. For example, there's Plex, the personal learning environment that was developed by Scott Wilson at CITES in Great Britain. In my own case, I've done some work in this area. I built something experimentally called MyGlue. And again, the purpose of MyGlue is to aggregate and remix content. The way MyGlue works is it collects RSS feeds, it joins them, it filters them, and then it presents them to the user. I use this to feed into something called RSS Writer. and again, this is an early prototype. This takes the content from one of these aggregators and presents it in an editing window, the big yellow box, where we now remix it and repurpose it. And then we can send this or feed this forward to things like Blogger or Flickr or some other online account. Scott Wilson followed up on the development of RSS Writer by creating an application called Feed Forward, which makes sense, which does the same sort of thing. It aggregates text and content. It allows people to remix them, and then it allows them to feed forward into different repositories. As you can see on the right-hand side, you can send it to a Sword repository, or a Delicious bookmark, or to a weblog, and so on. The second theme relates to the first theme. Remember, we talked about learning as remembering, and that this is not probably the best picture of learning. Now we look at learning versus the right learning. How to use the technological framework I've just described in order to affect positive pedagogy. We need to understand in this world of complex technologies and complex subjects, we need to understand interdependence. We need to understand that there are no simple principles. There is no simple cause and effect. So the picture we are drawing is not one of content. It is a picture of me and my network of friends as we aggregate, remix, repurpose, and feed forward. We are creating a network. Now, there are different ways of creating networks. Networks are not all the same. A traditional network will be highly centralized. There will be influence. There will be power. It looks like a lot like a traditional educational institution with a teacher at the center distributing content to a collection of students. What we are attempting to produce is what is called a mesh network, where links are distributed, where interaction occurs through discussion, where there is a balance of power, where there is diversity, where there is democracy. The idea here is to try to find this midway point between individualism and mutuality. People often say that without the teacher to guide them, the person has to learn all by themselves, that they are alone. But as we can see in a mesh network, a person can be in a community even though there are no leaders dominating the community. It is a change of community where instead of the leaders telling us the story, instead of the leaders telling us what the content is, we ourselves become the story. We ourselves become the content. And so learning becomes more than just competition for grades and memory and tests. It becomes a matter of cooperation, of sharing, of creating open resources. This leads to something that I call the second butterfly thesis. And the second butterfly thesis is the idea that people share, that people do this willingly, that they do not need to be compensated. And I don't know about the Czech Republic or Slovakia, but in Canada, people put butterflies on their houses. And you see a picture of such a butterfly there. And they do not do it because they've been paid to do it or for any reason like that. They do it because they want to do it. They are sharing with no thought of earnings or recompense for themselves. And that idea lies at the core of the theory of connectivism. It's the idea that knowledge is distributed or shared across a network of connections, and therefore that learning is the ability to construct and traverse those networks, to learn how to communicate with those networks, to learn how to share with those connections. When you look at learning in this way now, you can look at learning as facilitated not simply through a centralized managed learning management system, but rather through a wide variety of different course components. George Siemens and I presented a course in connectivism online at the University of Manitoba, and we used a variety of course components. One thing we used was a wiki, where we and members of the course created our own course structure. Another component that we used was a course Moodle forum, so we had a threaded discussion forum in order to facilitate discussion. This leads to our third theme, groups versus networks. What we tried to do in this course was to create a network rather than a group. We tried to foster diversity, openness, autonomy, and interaction. The idea here is to create an open space where people are able to add their own content, their own ideas, in their own way. We are not determining the content, nor are we determining the technology, because people need to be able to share their own objects, their own content in their own way. It's not simply about passing messages. It's about creating and sharing objects that we care about. It's a system of distributed resources where learning is the process of creating these objects and then sharing them in this distributed environment. So in the first instance, we are able to share them in the wiki and in the Moodle learning platform. These objects are not simply text. They may look like an image, as you can see with this image of a cat. When a person creates an image of a cat and puts text on it, it's called a lolcat. And the exchange of these lolcats is an exchange of objects. And this exchange creates a conversation, and the objects form a language that that conversation takes place in. And so we end up creating for our online learning environment a set of repositories and syndication. The idea here is that instead of us trying to organize a course, instead of us trying to structure a course and logically proceed from beginning to end, our understanding is that a mesh network exchanging information back and forth in this way will organize and structure itself. Now, there is a demonstration online where you can see this principle in action in a physical environment. I do not have time to show the video here today, but if you go to this video, look up metronomes on YouTube, you will see how two metronomes can organize themselves even though they are completely separate. Sorry about the clock in the background. The principles of this self-organization are well understood. There are different types of organization, such as concurrency, contiguity, back propagation, Boltzmann based on settling, or harmony theory. And the idea is to create an application that facilitates this kind of self-organization. So following RSS writer, I created an application called Grasshopper. And this application provides a mechanism to create nodes in a mesh network. The idea of Grasshopper is that it allowed people to create objects that are important to themselves, to create, for example, pages on their own website. Grasshopper also captured input from remote websites through a list of feeds, and so it allowed you to manage the sources of information that you would get from other sites on the web. It allowed you to bring in that content, to analyze that content, and to map that content into a variety of content types. So in addition to the Wiki and the Moodle, George and I used Grasshopper to support our online course. And the first thing we did is we produced a daily newsletter, much like the daily newsletter that I talked about at the beginning of this session. And this daily newsletter created a thread that ran through our network. What we did is we had all of the students of the course create their own content in their own blogs or on their own websites. They provided us with RSS feeds, and then we would harvest or collect their content from across the web, wherever it may be. We harvested this content and then presented it to them. What resulted was a complex structure for the web course, and it looked like a map. It looked like a distributed web, where we had different content located in different places and linked to each other through various links and connections facilitated by Grasshopper. You know, we're moving beyond the era of Web 2.0. We're moving beyond the era of centralized content websites like Facebook and Twitter. We are moving toward a web where people provide their own content from their own site, their own service in their own way, and where the web is created by linking this content together. When we created our course, we also allowed students to create their own course components. Some of the things they created included a PageFlakes site. PageFlakes is an application that aggregates RSS and displays it on a single page. We also encourage the creation of wikis and gadgets in order to, again, capture course content and present it on a page. A site like PageFlakes is basically a collection of a dozen or whatever number of widgets and gadgets. Now, the widget landscape is still complex, but basically, the way to think of a widget is that it's like a web page, but without the browser. And when you have these web pages, you can send this content all around. You can send this content into other web pages. You can send this content into mobile devices. One application that is taking advantage of this capacity is Google Wave. And the idea of Google Wave is that a conversation consists not just of text in a discussion area, but of these objects that are created and then embedded into a discussion area. But we can go further than that. We can have these objects reside on our own desktop rather than simply on Google's website. Opera Unite is a way of merging a web server with a web browser so that we can serve these objects right off our own desktop and send them in a peer-to-peer rather than centralized way to our peers and our friends in the network. Windows Live Mesh is again an attempt to do the same thing. Firefox has an extension called Plain Old Web Server, which again is an attempt to do the same sort of thing. The idea here, using these technologies, is to create networks of interactions to aggregate, remix, repurpose, feed forward content from our very desktop, from our very own computers, to each other around the internet, to create a personal learning center rather than something that is owned by Google or something that is owned by a university or a college. The idea here is we have a diverse network with multiple views, multiple perspectives, multiple technologies. And these different technologies are connected and interactive. They are not integrated into a single whole. They are, as David Weinberger said, small pieces, loosely joined. The idea is that this network is open. It's not a closed system. It is an open network of sharing from one information provider to another information provider. That concludes my presentations. I hope I've managed to stay within the timelines, and I thank you for your attention. Okay, so the question is, should, given that there are people who do not want to connect open like this, should we try to motivate them or force them or allow them to join spontaneously? And my belief is that the advantages of working openly, working in a network, become self-evident over time. And that, therefore, it should not be necessary to require or to force or to mandate people to share openly, that those who share openly will acquire a significant advantage over those who do not, and that this advantage will be noticed over time. Again, it's a case of letting people decide on how they network and what technology they use for themselves. You know, it's true that it's the case that many people will not join. I think less and less over time, but especially at the beginning, people will not want to share. And I think that, to a certain degree, nothing will change the minds of these people. Thomas Kuhn said, a scientific paradigm change occurs not because new scientists convinced old scientists that they were right, but because the old scientists retired and left the scene, and the new scientists took over the field. And I think that would be the case with sharing as well. I think somebody who was brought up in an era of sharing probably won't be convinced, and will be replaced only when they retire. And that's okay. You know, that's all right. We don't have to do this all in 1 minute. Now, from my presentation, you may imagine that one of the things I want to do is share. And so I can tell you that the slides are already uploaded and on my website. Also, I have recorded the audio of my talk, and this also will be available. And so if you go to my website, www.downs.ca, then you will be able to access all of the audio and the slides as well. And I'll just show that on the screen, that address here. Okay, the question is, what is the role of the teacher in this model of learning that I've described? And in a sense, there's two ways to describe this. One way I talked about this is to say that the role of the teacher is to model and to demonstrate. And what I mean by that is the following. As I said, to learn in a connectivist model is to participate in a community, to share, to engage in conversation. What is happening when a person does that is they are acquiring habits of mind that are common to people who are already experts in that community. They begin to talk like that kind of expert. If it's, say, a community of physicists, they begin to talk like a physicist. They begin to think like a physicist. They begin to solve problems like a physicist. It's a matter of converting one's whole being into that form of expert. Now, the way they acquire this capacity is they participate and exchange in a community of physicists. The role of the educator is to participate in that community fully and completely and to model and demonstrate these behaviors, to model and demonstrate these capacities. It's how often have we heard this slogan? I heard it just the other day. Be the change that we want to see in the world. And this is something that Gandhi said. This is something that educators have said through history. The role of the educator is to be the model, the paradigm, the example of the expert that they want the students to become. Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.